Now it's time for Homegrown on 94.7 WPBC LP Charlottesville with your hosts Clinton Johnston and Leslie M. Scott Jones, Charlottesville's only radio show devoted to local arts. And now, here's...
Good morning, Sunday morning. Whether you were an art maker, an art faker, an art partaker, or an art breaker, welcome to Homegrown, because all are welcome to Homegrown, your show about local art. I'm the one that they call Clinton, and I'm here with a person who is three times more Leslie than you are. Leslie, I'm Scott Jones.
Well, good morning, Clinton. How are you?
I'm all right, Leslie. How are you?
I'm awesome.
Are you?
I am.
Well, that's great.
I am awesome. I had an amazing vacation. Although I do have one thing.
What was your one thing?
There's one thing.
What's the one thing?
People need to learn to walk in an amusement park.
As opposed to
walking and then stopping. Dead. I mean, like, everybody's tooling along. We're all going the same direction. It's cool. It's fine. And then all of a sudden, somebody just decides to stop.
Do they by any chance, do they stop and text?
Yes.
Yes.
They're looking at their damn phone. They're like, if you need to have a conversation about what the next ride you're going to ride, the next attraction you're going to see, move off to the side so that you don't piss off the person behind you. Okay. I'm just, you know, I did really well. I really did. You know, I went there and I was like, this is not my thing, but I'm going to go with an open mind and, you know, bathe in the alternate reality that is Disney. And I did.
You were going to give yourself over to the mouse.
I was. And I did, you know.
Okay.
And let me tell you, that mouse is tricky. All right. Tricky little mouse. So the last day. Okay.
Uh-huh.
We went to Magic Kingdom a second time because my daughter decided that
a second.
Yes, because Epcot was not enough for her. She was like, I want to go to Magic Kingdom. Fine. Okay. So the last day we're staying so we can see the fireworks because you have to see the fireworks, right?
Yeah,
you have to.
You mean over Cinderella's castle.
Yes.
Well, you've got to see that.
You've got to see it. Right. Yeah. So we're walking through a couple of the shops, you know, waiting for the fireworks to begin. And there were 5,000 people in this shop. I mean, just, and all of them have absolutely no clue that they weren't the only person in the world. Okay? And I lost it. I lost it for just a minute. I'm standing there. We go to turn around to go to another part of the store, and this little 12-year-old teeny bopper standing there in her own little world, not realizing that people needed to move around her. And she's just standing there, like, staring off into space, like, not even looking at anything. And I lost it a little bit, and I went, excuse me. And she moved, and we proceeded.
Piercing through the hormone-addled cloud.
Right. And of course, you know, my daughter was like, Mom. And I'm like, what? I said, excuse me. She's like, no, you didn't. You did the black mama, excuse me. And I was like, well, I am one.
I was about to say the African, the angry African-American mother, excuse me, isn't quite the same as I said, excuse me.
I'm like, we moved, right? I like the... What we wanted
like
to happen.
Slapping
happened.
Her upside the head with a cast iron skillet. And then saying, what? She's still breathing.
Right. And she was. It was fine.
All right. Well,
you know, my nerves were a little frayed at the end.
Because,
you know, it had been like 4 days of happiness and joy. And I, you know, and even the Maleficent horns that I bought did not help.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
You bought Maleficent horns.
Yes, and they're amazing.
I can imagine they are. I imagine they are. If I don't see those come Halloween, then I will be quite surprised and not a little disappointed.
Oh, you're going to see them. Oh, yeah. I'm going to. Yeah. Yeah. That's the plan.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think we should go on to the Pence-Trump report.
Yes, let's do that.
Actually, here at the beginning of the year, the beginning of 2017, 19 days until Trump takes office and drags his basket of deplorables with him, I just wanted to take a moment to talk about why the beginning of the show has changed. People who have listened to the show, if anyone's listening to the show,
oh, stop that.
May have noticed that that the show has changed. The show used to be a little bit light. We hope that the show is still lighter, but the show's certainly taken on a political bent with the Pence-Trump report. We are not trying to be the Daily Show. We are not trying to be a political show. We are still homegrown show about local art, and we will dedicate ourselves to local art. But it's just art is, if art is anything, it is about communication, it is about expression. And to co-opt a term from Islamophobic hystericists of the past, art is the ultimate see something, say something, or hear something, say something, or feel something, say something, or do something, say something. Art is the experience of the artist reflected back at you through the filter of the experience of the artist. And this is where I am at right now. Because I think that something, I believe that something extreme and that something extraordinary has happened in our country. Surely we have had racists in office before. Surely we have had sexists and homophobes and Islamophobes and Christocentrists in office before. But the level of embrace of what can only be called as a dedication to a particular white superiority, I think is unprecedented. I think that what we are seeing is nothing less than the Republican Party reaching out, swallowing whatever sense of self-worth it had, and then spitting it to the side and embracing a neo-fascist faction within its own ranks. And it must be talked about. It must be talked about. It must be paid attention to. And that is where I'm at. Because if false equivalency was the watchword or the catchword or the catch philosophy for the election, I think inappropriate normalization will be the catchword for this upcoming administration, and it shouldn't be, because this isn't business as usual. So there you go. If you don't want to hear the political stuff at the beginning of the show, then it's easy. Just tune in 5 minutes after that. We hope that it'll still be entertaining. We hope that it'll still be interesting. But just to let you know, are we going to still do this for the entire 4 years? I don't know. It depends on what they do for the entire 4 years.
Completely depends on how much, I can't say that word on the radio, we have to put up with. Yes.
There you go. And anyway, who knows who they'll pick to head the FCC. They might shut us down in 5 months anyway.
I know, right? Because if anything, this president cannot handle any type of criticism. Big baby.
I mean, Obama himself reached out to a former cable lobbyist for the FCC. Can you imagine what Pence is going to choose?
Oh, my God.
To head the FCC? Good gosh. Hey, FCC, how you doing today? Good morning to you guys.
Love ya.
Did you get my fruit basket? Full of fruits. Hi.
Yes. Next week, it's an edible arrangement.
I sent a fruit basket of deplorables to the FCC. Let's go to something a little bit less deplorable. Let's hit our first guest today, Nathan Andereth. Welcome to Homegrown.
Clinton, how are you doing?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
Doing fantastic. Looking forward to getting started the new year.
Excellent, 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 excellent. And let's talk about what you've got on task for the new year. You have on task for the new year a Christmas show. What?
It is not a Christmas show. No, it's actually best described as an anti-Christmas show.
Okay.
I'm directing a play called Xmas Carol. And it is, we've taken the classic Dickens story of A Christmas Carol, and we're flipping it on its head. It's a dark, subversive take where Xmas itself is actually a cult that has taken over the town, and Scrooge is the last person in town that has not bought in yet. And so the spirits of Xmas, past, present, and future, come to use supernatural indoctrination techniques to break her will and teach her the true meaning of Xmas.
Wow. That's a little different.
A little bit. Yeah, little just bit. a small modification.
Now you say... Very noticeable. Now you say her.
Yes. So, yeah, we have a female Scrooge, Brooks Willick, who is just an amazing local actress.
She is. She's really great.
In a few things. She's done a few movies and TV shows as well. And she has really inhabited this character to an extraordinary degree. She brought a lot of raw humanity and reality to a part that could very easily be overblown or taken to parody extremes, mm-hmm. as often done.
So the core material is, of course, a story about... a transformation. It's a story about not just transformation. I'm blanking on the word, but
redemption. But
redemption. There you go. Story about redemption. And it's a redemption that Scrooge goes through. Is that all out the window? Is the Scrooge now the heroine in this? I mean, have you? How much of the flip?
I would say that Scrooge is an anti-heroine here, as well as kind of a victim. We looked at A Christmas Carol, and we were excited to start doing it, but it did feel a little bit done.
Right.
Again and again and again. And not just A Christmas Carol, but that basic archetype in the morality play where you have the individual and then you have society. And the individual believes something that society thinks it's wrong, and at the end of the story, the individual is totally changed to fit society, and that's a good thing, and we celebrate it.
Exactly.
And we thought that was a little done, a little tried, and so we thought it'd be interesting to see what we could do to take it on its head, where society's ideas were a negative, dark force, forced conformity, forced love, forced charity, forced an outward sign of peace and happiness, while inside was something rigidly controlled and sick. And that Scrooge, although she's not a nice person, mm-hmm. she's still a real rough customer, that is her individuality. That is the only thing that has kept her from succumbing as everyone else has.
You know, what strikes me is that the show, the source material, as you describe it, is very non-American.
Yes.
Because we like stories about the individual bucking society. We very much enjoy, again, the myth of individuality, yes. and the myth of the pioneer of breaking out, and that's what we support. And it's really interesting that the core story, of course, is not an American story. It's a Victorian English story.
Right.
And it seems like the take that you've taken is a particularly American take, where you've gone back and really put the individual on a pedestal.
I think that's definitely true to an extent. I mean, it's interesting if you look at most of Dickens' work, it follows the individual fighting against society. And you look at David Copperfield or Tale of Two Cities. Christmas Carol is really the only one where everyone else is right and the individual is wrong. But yeah, this is definitely, I would say, a more American take on it. Particularly, we're tapping into a lot of the cult frenzy of the 60s and 70s, mm-hmm. where people were joining new cliques and new ideas and trying to find some sort of solace and connection.
The conformity of the 50s?
There's definitely that element as well, yes. And that's actually a really good point, because all the cultists are dressed in sort of the greens and reds, the Xmas colors that give this kind of outward sign of joy and happiness and things like that. So we're definitely tapping into a lot of those. And the fact that Scrooge is a woman, I think, plays into that as well much more, because we have a society where women, and I think almost every society in the world right now, is one where women are constantly critiqued and analyzed and being told that they are not being friendly enough, conformist enough, that they're not hitting this or that ideal. And so this is one where the woman has successfully for a long time fought back. Mm-hmm. Now, spoiler alert, we haven't changed the story. In fact, I'd say 90% of the dialogue comes straight from the Dickens novel.
Interesting. So she's still a moneylender?
She's a financier.
Right.
Okay. Yes. And then, but in the end, the spirits win. And in the end, she does convert to Xmas, but in this version, that is not a good thing. That is a loss. That is the tragic death of the hero.
Interesting. Where did you get this adaptation from? Is it somebody else's or is it yours?
It's mine. Right. Yes. The core script was written by a friend of mine who directed a straight version that was very, very good down in Norfolk. Mm-hmm. And then he gave me that and then we adapted it. And to be honest, it has been I can't really say that I have written the script. It's really the entire cast. Mm-hmm. Because I came in with
just talking to you right now, yeah. I've been getting vibes of a group piece.
Oh yeah, very much so. The rehearsals have been, especially in the early on, were all often a script workshopping as each actor brought their own ideas of what their character was, what their arc was, and felt like this could be a way we could guide it here, or here's how we can add something there. Because each of these characters is much more complicated than in the original story. Mm-hmm. But, Fred, for example, Scrooge's nephew, is a high-level member of the cult, and so his cheerfulness and happiness has a real menace underlying it. Bob Cratchit is a reluctant member of the cult, and so he's facing both the financial pressure and the pressure to conform better and be more Xmassy. His wife is really struggling with those things as well, as their kids, especially Tiny Tim, become more and more indoctrinated to a point where they can't really recognize them. So every character, especially Brooks, our lead, has really been able to guide and shape a lot of their own dialogue.
So it's like Christmas Carol meets Children of the Corn.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. The kids are creepy. Oh, man.
Really?
Terrifying. Yes.
How is that different from the way kids usually are?
Clinton.
It's true.
It is not true.
No, we really had to do very little to make the kids scary.
Oh, my God.
They're like people, but they're not.
Stop it.
Finally, a guest for me.
Oh, my God.
We've got six child actors, and they've done an amazing job. They're involved in three different dances and song numbers. They all have a multitude of characters, and it's been really a joy to work with them. They're all really top-notch child talents.
So how did you find kids to do this show? And how did you explain this new take on this story that I'm sure they had heard before?
Yes. This one was, it was actually easier convincing the kids than the parents, because the parents, you know, because the kids, they've seen this a couple times, but for the parents, this is a story that they've grown up with their entire lives.
Right.
And so it ended up being a process. I'll tell you where I got the kids, though, and that's that this is actually being produced by Guerrilla Theater Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And so Guerrilla Theater Productions is a local theater company that has its main mission. At least half of the shows are children's shows.
Right.
And we teach acting techniques, stage management, directing, every part of theater to these kids. And so most of these kids have been with the theater for quite a while.
Okay.
And so they're old pros. A lot of them have done more shows than I have. So, yeah, it's been really smooth and fun to work with them a lot. It's a really good core.
Great. Yeah. So, but you're not doing it at Guerrilla, right?
You're not. No. So, it is very difficult to keep a theater alive in general.
Yes.
But particularly in Charlottesville. Charlottesville is a wonderful artistic community for musicians.
Yes.
There are so many musical venues. Theatrical productions and I'd say visual arts and any kind of performative art other than music, it's a lot more difficult.
Before we get into this, why don't we do a drop, take a break for station identification, because this is a whole topic that we really want to dive into. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 18 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art here on 94.7 WPVC. If you're just joining us, then hey, welcome. Good morning on this Sunday morning. Make sure you stay tuned with us. So, because after the show is a Sunday morning wake up call with your host, Rick Moore. He's going to be talking to Lee Channing, an intuitive advisor.
I'm a little confused about that title. What does that mean?
I am confused about that title as well.
Okay.
We will just have to tune in.
and figure it out.
To the Sunday morning wake-up call.
How about that?
How about that?
You know what? We don't even have to tune in. We could just stick around.
We could just hang out.
I know. Yeah.
Because it's that type of thing.
It is. It really is. And you know how I feel about Rick.
He's a big old teddy bear.
Every time I see him, I just want to hug him.
Yeah, Rick. Yeah, I get you. I'm with you.
All right.
I'm down with that. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Jason Andereth. Local performer and director. Oh, Jason, sorry. Nathan Banner. His evil twin Jason is here too. Nathan's not here right now.
Thanks, Glenn. It's a real pleasure to be here with you guys.
2017, it's all going to be the upside down.
Yes. We're getting off on a good foot.
From here on out. Yes.
All right.
And we're talking about his adaptation of the Christmas Carol, not just his, but also his theater group's adaptation of the Christmas Carol and Xmas Carol. Ba-boom. So.
Yes.
Theaters. Hard to do. Charlottesville. Yeah. Boom.
So the question that was asked just a second ago was, why is it that we are not performing at Gorilla, which we are performing, by the way, at Ix Art Park.
Awesome.
Yes, it's a fantastic space, and they've been wonderful at helping put us up. So essentially, like I said, it's very difficult often to keep a theater group going because there's just certain physical needs with theater that you don't always have with other things. You need a space, not just a space to perform in, but one to rehearse in. You need costume, set, lights, utilities, all of it adds up. And theater is not a profit-making venture. And so unless you have a lot of donors or an extraordinary good luck with grants or things like that, you really struggle to keep the lights on every day. And so with Gorilla, after 5 years, we had gotten to the point where we just really couldn't keep making the rent every single month, which is a real shame.
And Gorilla was existing mostly in ticket sales, right?
Yes, ticket sales
and go ahead.
And some tuition from the actors, and then just donations from, you know, friends in the community. Yes.
And also classes?
We taught a lot of classes. We had classes in circus. We had classes in master acting classes. We had improv classes. And so those were really helping as well. But
And that's the usual trifecta for theaters, right? Ticket sales, donations, workshops. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting for people to hear this because I think a lot of people who don't know theater, don't know the ins and outs of theater. In fact, I think there are even a lot of people in theater who think that ticket sales do the deed.
Yeah.
When, as a matter of fact, ticket sales are, you're usually, for almost every theater, a very, very small percentage of their operating budget.
That's absolutely right. Yeah, we could not come anywhere near to meeting our expense needs simply by ticket sales alone, no matter how many shows we did. And we were putting on a lot of shows. We were putting on 6 or 7 shows a year.
Were cranking them out.
We were on a fast pace, and it just wasn't enough to keep up. And we had a lot of grants in the works and a lot of irons in the fire, and we got a lot of wonderful donations. But at the end of the day, we realized it just wasn't going to work. So, however, this story actually has a happy ending because Gorilla Theater is still alive.
Unlike an Xmas Girl, sorry.
That is very true. Gorilla Theater is still alive, and we are keeping our original space.
Oh, really?
Yes, which is really, really good news for everyone who's sunk a lot of their time and energy and love into it, and it's kind of our family. Basically, what we've done is we've taken a lot of the core members, and we've turned them into a board of directors with equal levels of authority. We vote on everything, and basically, we end up, out of our own donations and our own pockets, making up the gap between whatever we can earn and whatever the expenses come out there. And that's really been a labor of love.
Wow, that is a completely different turn about for how it was run before.
Yes.
So how many members of the board are there?
Right now there are 6. So it's myself, Anna Leon, Andy Davis, Jack Rakes, Emily Leon, Lauren Gilroy, and Kendall Stewart, who's kind of heading that up. Yeah.
Great. So how did this decision happen? Was it a conversation between everybody, or what? Like, how did that come about?
Basically, what it was is that we were at a certain point where we decided that Gorilla would be a more nomadic theater group, and we would kind of find our spaces and our rehearsals where we could, and we would space the shows out. But then we really realized that while that might work for the adults, for the kids, they really needed that central location, and that if we lost the space, then we would really lose that core of kids that we've been working with for so long, many of whom have been with Gorilla for years, have grown up with it, have become amazing actors with it, have made some of their best friends with it, and that's just not something we were willing to do.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, when we really thought about that, and each of us has our own, we're only where we are because of the theater that we did as kids.
Right.
You know, I can certainly say that personally. And so I didn't want to lose, we didn't want to lose that opportunity for these kids. Kendall Stewart was the real driving force behind this. And she's the one that pulled everyone together along with Anna Leon to kind of reshape and refocus Gorilla. So I think it's going to be a stronger group going forward. I think we're going to have, try to get a broader base appeal, and it's going to be more stable because we've got people who are really committed to keeping it afloat.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's what happens with any organization. I mean, if you don't have people that are really committed to it and willing to do whatever is required to keep it going, then yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I feel really lucky to be a part of this group and people who are really willing to kind of put in their pound of flesh to keep this little corner of our arts in Charlottesville alive.
Cool. So, I'm sorry. Clinton wants to say something.
Hey, you don't have to announce it. It's like I'm bothering you or something.
They only have one microphone between the two of them. It's fun to watch.
There you go. So what was it like shifting venues for the piece? Because it was originally, you were originally designing it to do in your old space,
right,
at Gorilla.
Right.
But then switched it to the Ix. So was it outdoor at Ix?
No, God, no. We would not put our audiences sitting through a January show in the middle of the night outdoor. No, there's a performance space, indoor performance space at Ix. If you know the big statue park there, and there's that outdoor theater, there's a door just to the right of it. And right back in there, there's a huge, beautiful performance space with a lovely stage, a full light setup, everything.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys went to the Leonard Cohen Memorial Tribute Concert that they did, but that was in there, and that was very successful. Corey Caprone, my friend, put that on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the transition was not the easiest thing in the world. Ix was fantastic. They have let us use the space in exchange for only a cut of ticket sales and concessions, which is a major, major gift on their part.
Good for them. Good for them.
Yeah, very, very grateful. They normally charge quite a bit of money per evening, and they deserve it. And in our case, because we were in a place of need and because they thought that we had a show that was controversial and interesting, that it fit with their entire artistic mission. And so they've been really, really great. They've worked with us. We've rebuilt the stage. We've hung new lights. And they've been with us every step of the way. They've made the process very, very smooth. And I'm very grateful to them for that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So... Have you adjusted the show in terms of set, in terms of the actual physical spectacle of the show? Is it necessarily bare bones because of the shift, because of the move, or have you
fortunately enough, when we originally conceptualized the show, we were already going with
it was already spare.
I don't love the bare bones word, but yeah, I guess that would kind of have to be it, because we wanted to have a very fluid show. We wanted to have as few set changes as possible. There's almost no blackouts, so we ended up with a modular set. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of different blocks that can be reformed and shifted around in any given scene to fit the needs that we have. And the rest of the set is evoked by the lighting, which we have Kim Schwanner. She's an old veteran.
Oh,
lighting.
Yeah.
She's fantastic.
Yeah, yeah.
And she set up some beautiful lights for us as well. The set changes are done by a cabal of hooded figures in red and green.
This sounds like a cast and crew of thousands here, huh?
It's a lot of people. I've got 20 people in my cast, and then a production team of 6 to 7. So it's a big, big crowd.
Gracious me.
Yes.
That, in and of itself, is impressive.
Yeah, it's a lot of really good folks, and I'm very, very proud of all of them. They've really, you know, contributed a lot of their time to this project, which is very difficult around this time of year. You know, mm-hmm. a lot of them mm-hmm. ended up cutting some of their vacation short to make sure they can get rehearsals or tech work.
Right.
People, you know, even kids staying until late at night on school days.
Right.
Parents, you know, a lot of people. The amount of time and work, because we've been working on this for the last, you know, 2.5 months or so. So really, yeah, I've been really floored and really gratified and humbled by the amount of work these guys have all put into this. And it's a huge crash, but we've needed every single minute of every one of them.
Well, let's get some people out to see this show.
Absolutely.
Nathan, tell us.
All right.
The where, the when, the why.
We're at Ix Art Park. That address, if anyone needs it, is 522 2nd Street Southeast. It's the one with all the crazy statues in it. You can't miss it. And we are the next 2 weekends. So we are running Thursday through Sunday this coming weekend, January 5th through 8th. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, we're at 8 p.m. Sunday, we're at 2 p.m. And then the next weekend, same days, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Although our Saturday show is a 2 o'clock one because there's a big party at Ix that evening.
So oh, my.
We can't really compete with that, unfortunately.
I bet you will,
you know,
though.
I bet we could.
I bet you will.
We're going to have our own cast party.
Exactly. So it will be the Xmas party.
The Xmas party.
Come join the Xmas party. Ho, ho. Ho.
Absolutely. We know when you're sleeping. We know when you're awake. My friends. We know when you've been bad or good, so be good for Xmas sake. But yeah, it's tickets are $15 for adults, $10 for children. We're going to have beer and wine. Yeah, we really, really hope to see folks there. You know, we're hoping that, although, you know, a lot of people might feel a little tired of Christmas, this is not a Christmas show. If you can take all
So if you're a little tired of Christmas, this is
this
the show
is the
for
show
you.
To go to. Absolutely.
Seems like this is a really nice holiday nightcap.
Yeah,
there.
I think so. It's a palate cleanser. It's a palate cleanser. It's got gore. It's got fear. It's got some great physical comedy. It should do you right.
Excellent. Bring your friends, bring your enemies. An Xmas Carol at It's Our Park by Guerrilla Theater. Nathan, thank you very much.
Hey, thank you guys so much. Had a lot of fun.
Excellent. So do we. Looking forward to have you back.
Yes.
On Homegrown.
Absolutely.
31 minutes past the hour. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. And this is, of course, Homegrown. Here's about local art. Let's talk about some of the local art going on in the area this week. This is the last day. The last day. The final diurnal group of minutes and hours for the Shenandoah Film for Fringe Festival. They are accepting applications for acts. This is your last day to submit your work in performance, visual art, and film to this curated profit-sharing arts festival. For information, go to www.shenfringe.com. Shenfringe.com! On January 4th, the Eyes on Art Tour at UVA's Fralin Art Museum. Okay, get this. This is fascinating. Continued exposure to art and music can slow the decline, apparently, of persons with Alzheimer's disease and other memory disorders. So, the UVA Fralin's Art Museum has Eyes on Art. It's an innovative program designed in partnership with the Arts Fusion Program of the Central and Western Virginia Chapter of the Alzheimer's Association. The program engages people with Alzheimer's in meaningful discussions about art. Check it out. Reservations required. Contact the Fralin Art Museum for more information. January 5th, Books on Tap by Jefferson Madison Regional Library at Champion Brewery. This month's book, We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson. Get a copy of the library. You only have a few days to read it before the discussion at Champion. January 6th, of course, First Fridays downtown. Loads and loads of galleries opening up for exhibits. Speaking of exhibits, on January 13th, two exhibits are opening at the Bridge PAI. One is Trailer Park Witchcraft with Richmond's Titus Marcus and Portals by Charleston, South Carolina's Greg Bannock. Marcus typically works on canvas with acrylics, fabrics, and papers. His work has been described as intriguing, to the point, and mouth-watering. Bannock is a painter. He says his work is derived from philosophical and metaphysical inquiries along with internal landscapes of portals to other realities. That sounds fascinating. Bridge PAI. January 14th, was from Letters as Poems, a seminar at the Charlottesville Writer House with Rosalind Elliott. 3.5-hour seminar will offer students an opportunity to read, discuss, and write poems in which the speaker addresses a specific person in letter format. Check that out and pay attention to the Writer House. So many great seminars that they offer all the time. Please, please keep track of them. And here are just some of the musical offerings you've got coming to you in this new year. January 3rd, Tony LaRocco, frontman for the Pale Blue Dot at Rapture. January 4th, Alice and the Blenders at Dirty Nelly. January 6th, the Chickenhead Blues Band at Fellini's. The Michael Clem Band with the Pollux at the Southern Cafe and Music Hall. Woo! And Kiz Carter and Juke Jackson at Dirty Nelly's. Also, Gina Sobel's Choose Your Own Adventure at the Whiskey Jar. Bob Bonetta and the Chickenhead Blues Band at Fellini's. And also on January 6th, Philosopho Punk Tequila Mockingbird, one of my favorite band names, and the Blenders at the Anteroom, and DJ Tulo at Tavern on the James. January 7th, Gypsy Town at Wildwolf Brewery. John Wyant at Dirty Nelly's. John Dearth at Fellini's. Michael Coleman with the Fatigues at the Pro Reynada Farm Brewery. And of course, every Monday, it's the singer-songwriter night at the local. Every Tuesday, the traditional Irish session at the Tin Whistle Irish Pub. Every Tuesday, of course, also open mic night at the Anteroom. Open mic night on Wednesday at the Prairie Nada Farm Brewery. Every Wednesday, the Jazz Collective No. 9 at Fellini's No. 9. Quiet Fire at the Bebedero. The Mike Rosensky and Jeff Decker Quartet at Miller's. And speaking of Miller's, hang on till Thursday, because you can go down to one of the longest-running, the longest-funnin' jazz gigs in Charlotte. History. It's the John Dearth Quintet at Miller's on Thursday night, because every once in a while you just got to come down to Dearth. And those are just some of the artistic choices available to you in our wonderful artistic town. If you're an artist and have an event and you'd like us to talk to people about it, we'd like to do it. Give us your event information on our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/homegrownwpvc, or you can send it to us at our handy-dandy email address, homegrown947@gmail.com. Give me a drop. Just give me a drop. Just give me a drop. Just give me a drop. Drop, drop. Give me a droppity drop.
This is Michael Clem. You are listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC.
36 minutes past the hour. This is Homegrown on 94.7, brought to you by Blue Moon Diner. Blue Moon Diner, breakfast all day, every day, with lunch on Saturdays and Sundays, and carefully constructed diner food in the afternoons and evenings. And speaking of evenings, Blue Moon Diner is nice enough to support local and visiting artists for years and years and years. This week on Wednesday, Jim Wave. On Thursday, our friends in Mojo Pie. And on Friday, Cincinnati's Wonky Tonk. That is Jasmine Poole with her hard scrabble country-tinged sound. This is the progressive voice of Charlottesville. You're listening to Homegrown. Stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore, talking to Lee Channing and Intuitive Advisor. But before that, you got to put up with us and our next guest. Coming on Homegrown again, the Grand Poobah of the X Art Park, Brian Weimer. What up, Brian?
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
You bet. You bet. A lot of people seem to not like 2016 too much, but I think it's all right. I think 2017 is going to be weird, but, you know, hey, we got to do what we got to do.
Well, I would take weird over whatever 2016 was.
Well, I don't know. I mean, a lot of, you know, we had all these people die and all sorts of stuff. I mean, but in my world at X, I don't know. We had, like, some amazing, I think we hosted, like, 62 bands. And I don't know, like, crazy how much stuff that we did. And so I'm a little bit like, well, that was pretty good. So what's next? And actually, the sort of new challenges present new opportunities. So, hey, I'm all for it. Bring it on.
Awesome. So let's talk about 2016 at X. So we had you on the show at the beginning of the year. After a year, talk about well, I mean, the type of stuff that went down at X.
Well, let's see. I mean, we had like 5 plays there. We did 12 film screenings. We did like 32 workshops, 15 charity fundraisers. We had a circus there. We, I think, had about 15 new works of art made, and we helped break a Guinness World Record. So, I don't know. That was all.
Wait, which Guinness?
On nothing.
A Guinness World Record?
Which Guinness World Record did you break?
We were working with Matthew Slatz, and he had a plan to break the world record for largest cardboard structure. And so they built this gigantic, massive spaceship and all these other little space thingies around it. It was around when we did the Levitt concerts, and I think it was when we did the Mighty Joshua concert. So we had like a reggae and spaceships. And it was like, okay, well, that was an interesting mashup.
You know, I cannot think of a better mashup than reggae and spaceship. That's the mothership right there, Mon.
Exactly. You know, 2016 was all like that. Hey, man, give me another one just like it.
So do you see 2016 as the proof of concept of an art park as a communal space for art to happen, either in a spontaneous or in a planned way?
Well, the way I've been looking at it lately, because I think everything there is fairly ephemeral. I mean, you see development happening all over the city, and, you know, there will be change there eventually. So I've been looking at it as more about process than about product. Because, I mean, and one day something else, you know, it could develop into something or it could not. But for me, it's about being in the place at the time when something's happening. Like somebody's building a big cardboard spaceship while a great reggae band is playing. So to me, it's about that moment. It's not about necessarily the proof of a concept, because I think the concept was possibility. We have proved possibility. And I sort of see it as a manifestation of what happens when you get enough creatives together and enough willpower and enough of a supportive community. And I think it did work. And I think it will continue to work. But it only works on the basis of people.
Right.
Right.
So now that the 2016 has come to a close, what can we expect from the Ix Art Park in 2017?
Oh, before we get to that, but speaking of supportive community, we just had as our guest Nathan Andereth from an Xmas Carol. He was talking about how you guys saved their rear.
Well, that's the nice thing, too, is a lot of places that are losing. I mean, a lot of what used to happen at Random Row Books is now happening at Ix. So as other places, you know, lose their spaces, whatever, I don't know. They seem to come to where we are because we have opportunities and space. And so I kind of put that out to people, whoever wants to do something or needs to move their location, bring it down and make a big arts collective. And, hey, theater is part of that. I'd like to bring more dance. Huge part of dance.
Word.
Dance, to me, is how people interact. We had Cielo Sabroso, and there was Latin dancing down there. It was a form of interaction that is this really high, you know, cultural, you know, motif of like, okay, I'm going to get dressed up, and I'm going to have moves, and I'm going to change partners, and I'm going to mix it up. And it's fun. It's like, wow, well, that's community. So let's community with dance and music and art and all sorts of other things. And I think in 2017, we have even more reason to do so. We've been hosting a lot of potlucks with the Together group and looking at all of the sort of imperatives of 2017 with an incoming Trump administration. What does that mean? So Cimbereras has been down and talking about immigration issues. We've had all sorts of people come about different issues and how they can address it. So I'm looking at Ix as sort of one as a safe space. And I don't mean that we're necessarily going to be able to protect people, but at least as a place of mutual respect for multiculturalism and opportunity, you know, regardless of who you are. So, and that is not restricted just to progressives. That is to everyone. You know,
yeah.
If you're a conservative, you want to come down. There were some people coming down from Greene County, and they were playing some Appalachian music. And they even said, you know, we don't really share your ideas, but we love playing music. I'm like, great. That's all we can share.
Well, and I think that kind of interaction between people is what we're missing. I mean, that's why we're in the spot we are now, is because we're like, well, I don't think the way you do, so I'm just not going to talk to you.
Right. And people will have disagreements. When we had the circus this year, somebody came up to me, there was a disagreement between two people, a Trump supporter and a Clinton supporter, and they were going to get in a fight. And I was like, what are you doing? It's a circus. There are kids around.
Right.
Like, can't you just talk this through? Maybe we'll have a juggle off. Hey, you know what? I think we're gonna. I saw that there's a thing. I forget what it's called in Japanese, but rock paper scissors is apparently huge over there. And they have like tournaments. I'm like, let's settle everything with rock, paper, scissors.
There you go.
That's the way to do it. There you go. And then dress up in cosplay too. So that adds just something fun to it.
That's awesome.
But I think there's another level too. Like when I've talked to people about the art park, sometimes they're like, well, that's art for art's sake. And we just don't have time for that. And I believe in art more for life's sake. And I want to start using the park as a sort of a lab, a place to experiment. And I'm going to start taking each month in 2017 and addressing a different issue that sort of impacts our life. Transportation, energy, sexuality, age, school. I mean, we can kind of go through health. And each month sort of find different ways to highlight it, different events that celebrate it, and ways that we can either discuss or work with issues within that. So, hey, energy. Energy is a big thing. Let's bring down all sorts of solar projects. Let's have alternative energy. Let's have bicycles. Let's whatever. And that can merge into transportation. But to me, it's an opportunity to look at everything that affects our lives and look at it in a cultural context.
Well, that's a really exciting idea.
Yeah, and it kind of gets into the pragmatism of why we do these sorts of things and how we can really have sort of substantial change, but also within the context of celebration. Because, like, we're going to have, actually, on January 21st, a sort of connection to the Women's March on Washington. But part of the notion was, well, do you just want to walk around with picket signs? Do you want to whatever? Or how do you make it celebratory? How do you make it something you want to be part of? And also, how do you make it non-exclusive, too? So how is it not just a reaction against something, but something that's leading towards something better.
Yeah.
So do you see the important and core elements of art as being inclusive, as being creative, as being something that leads to the next step in development of whatever?
Oh, I think so. I mean, it's hard to ask. I mean, there's a whole lot to ask of art. But I think that art can accomplish a lot of those things because art is not linear. Art doesn't say, okay, here's our objective, and we're going to plow through it to the goal. No, art throws you into the woods, and you have to find your way back. And how do you find your way back? Well, you look for clues, you look for help, you look for whatever, and it becomes something that's collaborative. And when you have collaboration, you come up with solutions that you wouldn't necessarily would have thought of linearly, especially with creative types, because creative types just are all over the place, and some of them are not necessarily the people who will follow through on things, but they're great idea makers. But then you mix them with the people who are the producers, and then you have something that you end up with that you didn't know that you wanted to begin with.
You know, I was looking at a video, and it was a guy talking about the specific problems of dealing with millennials. And one of the things that he was saying is that it's hard to get to get them involved in things. It's hard to get them focused on things. And it's hard to explain to them that working on something takes time and energy and that nothing is instantaneous. And so a lot of what you're saying to me goes back to that. Is that something that you've seen working with the people that do stuff at IX? Like, is there a dynamic there that you think you can help change by teaching millennials especially, or, you know, not necessarily only millennials, but teaching people that it takes time and energy and work to look at a problem from a different angle and figure out an innovative solution?
I'd say the opposite is true, and that's usually because that's just my answer. I think that millennials have a lot to teach us. I think that a lot of
Word.
Us are
well
very
said. Well said.
Entrenched in our ways of how to solve things, and if you look around ourselves, well, gee, we haven't done such a hot job, have we? So maybe there's a different way that a new generation who doesn't have our sort of roadblocks
What are you talking about? We've put a white supremacist in the White House. Did you think that that was possible? No, yeah. We did that.
Yeah. I mean, and they're inheriting the problems that we have not solved. We haven't solved health care. We haven't solved so many issues. We haven't solved transportation. We've created infrastructure and systems that now they have to wrestle with. Take transportation. We're the ones who built down this auto-centric culture, not them. They're the ones who are riding bicycles. They're the ones, and you can look at a model like Copenhagen or the Netherlands and say, well, how did they do it? It's like, no, it's us. We're the ones who have built these giant, you know, shopping centers and everything else that now we're having to cope with and say, what did we do? And I think that there's an energy within the millennials who, and a lot of ideas, and perhaps there are, is a pragmatism and a way of getting things done that, you know, we can perhaps impart to them. But frankly, when you look at, it's always young companies. It's the Googles, it's the Apples, and advertising, it was the young agencies that were leading how to do things new and differently. And it was like me in those boutique young, you know, shops in New York when I was working in advertising, surrounded by 20-somethings. They were creating the new way of doing things. And I think we can rely on that, but it's, we have to support that, and we can't belittle it. And we have to look for answers that are real answers, and not just kind of shrug them off and say, "Well, that's just idealistic thinking." We need to think idealistically because we're a country that has the resources to do whatever we want. So why are we holding back?
I like it. So if people are interested, where can they find a list of what's going on at the Ix Art Park?
Unfortunately, I'm very reliant on Facebook. And we've got a website, ixartpark.com. But Facebook is sort of where I've been interacting mostly. And we're going to try to get a little bit more on paper, too, because there are communities that don't use Facebook. Hey, believe that.
Right.
But Facebook is primarily the thing. And we put up an event schedule. There's an event calendar on our Ix Art Park website. And to get involved there. And if you can get involved with ideas, energy, we need funds desperately. You can donate. But however you want to participate, it's all about participation.
Brian, thank you so much for coming on Homegrown. We look
thank
forward
you.
To touching base with you during 2017.
You bet. Thanks for having me on this morning. Have a wonderful 2017, everybody listening, and be an artist.
Thank you. Keep art alive, baby.
Thanks, Brian.
Okay. Ciao.
51 minutes past the hour. 53 minutes past the hour, you're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and this is Homegrown, your show about local art. Make sure you stay tuned afterwards for the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call with your host, Rick Moore. He's talking to Lee Channing today, an intuitive advisor, but for the things more intuitive than any advice can give you, it's time for Leslie's Weekly Rant.
Why, thank you, Clinton. So, 2016 is officially over. It didn't leave without taking one more beloved actor with it. It also didn't leave without disgracing an 80s pop star, but we can kind of forgive it for that because it was funny. Yes, 2016 has officially become that ex that stares at you from a corner at a party of mutual friends, bitter and a little creepy as it watches you fully embrace your new love, full of hope and light. So what do we do with it? What will our journey be with 2017? I thought about making this rant all about the hopes and dreams I have for a new year. And I have a lot of them. But then I remembered that Donald Trump is president. I thought about talking about all the good that happened over this year. And there was a lot. Then I remembered all the people we lost. And all the hatred and death that for some of us came out of nowhere. So I thought we should purge our common collective. We should tell 2016 exactly what we think of them and let them know why it didn't work out. So here goes. 2016, baby, this was not a case of bad timing. This This was not a case of loving each other and forces beyond our control making it impossible to be together and happy. This was you. You were the problem. You came in with such high hopes. But our honeymoon period ended far faster than it should have. Our beloved artists that still had so much to give to all of us were taken one after the other. And like an alcoholic who just can't put the bottle down, we, the people in a relationship with you, begged you to stop. And you didn't stop there. You wrecked other relationships around us, whispering in the already shaky ear of the British people. You got them to break up with Europe. And really, was that was none of your business. You had no right to interfere in their relationship that had lasted for so long. Still, we tried to believe that you were just on a bender and that you would hit rock bottom and we could somehow bring you back. But no, that wasn't enough for you. Then you had to interfere with relationships even closer to us and convince our friends to put faith and trust in a racist, buffoon, sexual predator who apparently doesn't know a Russian spy from a hole in the ground. We still stayed with you, hoping that you would see the havoc that you had wreaked and be regretful. We hoped you would put the bottle down for good, but no, then you had to start on your killing spree again. You went out and got good and liquored up, got behind the wheel and hit George Michael, Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds, and even though the police were on your tail, you managed to hit William Christopher before you hit a tree. What did Father Mulcahy ever do to you? What did any of them ever do to you? Well, sweetie, we don't want to hear any of your excuses anymore. We have gone on this ride with you through death, bombings, fires, terrorist attacks, slut-shaming, and just downright meanness. And we are done. You hear me? Done. Gone with a D. You have used up all your chances. We cannot and will not forgive you this time. It's over. We will move on to our next relationship with a year that promises to be more stable and knows how to handle their liquor, we hope. If you had just realized what you were doing to everyone and changed your ways, we could have made this work. But you just had to be right instead of being happy. So, as you stumbled into the New Year's Eve party you weren't invited to, announcing your last murder, bleeding from the head wound you received while wrapping the car around a tree, we were counting down the last seconds of your life. We toasted to your demise. We kissed and sang and went home with 2017 and had the best sex we'd had all year. So all I can say to you is goodbye. It hasn't been fun, and you will not be missed. Girl, bye.
Well said, Leslie. Well said. Gosh. Darn it! I tell you, just, in fact, is 2016 still out there? I bet you they're still hanging out back, looking to be taken back. I'm gonna show them I'm gonna take back.
Uh-oh.
I'm gonna fight.
No, Clinton, no. Fighting is not good for you. No. Okay, well, I guess 2016 is about to get a beat down in the parking lot. And I'm okay with that, really. It's okay. We want to thank our guests, Brian Weimer, the Grand Poobah of the It's Art Park, and Nathan Anderen, the director of An Xmas Carol, running January 5th through January 15th at the It's Art Park. It was an It's Art Park day. That's all right. So you guys stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call with your host, Rick Moore. And we will see all of you guys next week.
You've been listening to Homegrown on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. You can contact the show on Facebook by searching Homegrown Charlottesville. Be sure to tune in again next Sunday at 10 for Homegrown, only on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville.